Tom.
You bet, Duncan.
I think one of the things we've got going for us here is that if a consolidation happened, this commission would still be in place, and that commission would still be in place. It's not like we're going to lose politicos that are trying to preserve their own political hide, because everyone will still be in place regardless. So, yay, at least one positive thing going forward. I think one of the things we need to talk about, I think for, I'll speak as a member of the public who's not in the service either way, would be I lived in an area that had BLS service, which was when the fire truck would show up with, it was potluck on who was going to be there with you. And then you had your basic life support. And then we had an advanced life support that was scheduled, was placed somewhere in the district that would come, that was a separate entity. So I guess the question would be, has anybody put together the plan for how, when a call comes in to 911, who gets dispatched and why? I think one of the fears out there is that if you call in with a heart attack, you want to see EMS show up. You don't, and nothing against the firefighters, but you prefer to see an EMS than a BLS unit show up for you. So it seems that if you could work out the idea of how the response would occur, a lot of these other problems may fall into place, as long as you can get that service level to where it's going to be and decide who's going to be sent and in what priority down the line.
Right now, the dispatchers are following the protocol for King County, where they try to screen the call to see if it is a BLS call. BLS stands for Basic Life Services, or an ALS, Advanced Life Services. And they try to do the screening to see what type of call it is, if it is a basic life service or if it is an advanced life service. How recently have they been doing that, Brad? It started.
We do have ALS respond to every call.
Right.
No, whether it's ALS or BLS.
But dispatch is using the King County protocols just for documentation at this point, and that's 4 or 6 months.
Maybe 9 months.
It's been longer than that, but they've just started using it more on. They're using it 100%
of the time.
Sure.
Yeah. Does that help answer that question a little bit, Doctor? Yeah, did I just get way off?
That's not changing what's actually happening on the ground right now.
No.
EMS is still responding everything ALS, and they page fire for known cardiac if they're going to need extra personnel.
I just haven't heard any problems that actually being able to work out. It sounds like everyone's in place and everything is in place where the same screening could take place. And so I haven't really heard what the major concerns are. Maybe that takes you to the next place in your agenda. But it'd be nice to know what the problems are, since there seems to be some benefits.
So I think that's one of the reasons we're having this discussion is I've been asked questions several times of why we're looking at this. My answer to that question most of the time, or all the time, Duncan, is that there is the... EMS is in the middle of a chief change. Maybe this is time to take a look at the operation, see if there is any benefits to combining the two at this time, to look at it, to see if we can provide better service. Can we streamline the service? And that's why I'm looking at it personally. And it's probably why a lot of us are at this table as well, too, to see if there are benefits to move forward. If not, can hospital district reorganize or do something with the EMS service to streamline it, to make it better? Do they need to make it better? One of the things that I went about with Brad and I went over to South Whatcom to see what they're doing. They are an RFA, Rural Fire Authority. And we met with Chief Ralston. And Chief Ralston, he explained the process that they had gone through the whole time over there. He told Brad and I that the first thing you have to do is, if you are looking at this type of service, Brad just hates it when I say this, but what is the level of service you're going to provide to the citizens? The citizens have the right to know if they live on the north end of the island and they call 911. It may take 20 minutes to get somebody on scene. if they live in the town of Friday Harbor and they call 911, may get someone there within 5 minutes, 10 minutes. So your service area has a right to know what they get to. Chief Ralston had it all written down to how far it was down for BLS service and also ALS service. ALS service was provided by Medic One, which came out of Bellingham. So at the Sudden Lake area, if it was an ALS call, you could wait as long as, was it 40 minutes, Brad? 40, 30 minutes, somewhere in there? For ALS service. And so went back and took a look at, if we were to provide the service, what equipment, what personnel, what approach we would take, any type in business approach, you need to know what your goals are so you can build your service to meet those goals. We've been yet to come up with a level of service that we could go up to the public and sell, because it's up to be up to the public and the voters to approve the levy if we're to increase our levy to move forward in a merger, that we'd have to get the funding to move forward, and we can't go to the voters and say, hey, we just want some more money. You know, we need to be able to sell a level of service that this is what you're going to pay for and this is what we can provide. If they turn it down, then the level of service would go down. So I mean, it's, we took a hard look at this. Another question is, you know, you read through the papers and everything, is the hospital board in that dire straits of troubles? Do they need to look at their operation? That's a question that's been going on for years. So I mean, it's, I can't speak on that side of the fence, but on our side of the fence, we've taken a look at it to see what is in the best interest of the public. And
well, can we show that we would be able to improve response time to the north end? I don't see how.
I don't see
the firehouses aren't staffed.
No,
there, you'd have to have an ambulance and a crew sitting there to improve their response time. Whether we're merged or not, it's not going to make any difference on response times. Fire gets there within our limits, our protocols, and EMS is getting there within their protocols. Now, 15 minutes is a long time. That's a very long time. But I don't see how we can improve that without having paid staff in those areas. So if we stay volunteer, we keep doing what we're doing now, we're meeting the goals that we've always, you know, been trying to meet. A merger is not going to change that. And I think you're going to have a hard time selling the public, especially, it's not going to affect the county folks, but the city of Friday Harbor folks are going to say, well, what's my benefit? You know, I get great service here. Fire is right around the corner. I've got EMS down the street. What is my benefit? Why am I going to have to pay more money to continue getting what I'm getting now? You know, if there are problems and issues that need to be addressed, then they need to be taken care of. Whether we go ahead with a merger in the future or not, we don't want to take on somebody else's debt or somebody else's problems. We're not the cash cow. We're not the Mr. Fix-It to make sure that everything, hey, don't worry, come to the fire. We got lots of money. We got lots of people. We can solve all your problems. That's not how this works. A merger's got to be, if it's a true merger, it's got to be two equals coming together to show that we can do something better. You know, I don't want to be the organization that loses out on some of the things that we're looking for in the future, because we can no longer afford to do those things because we've had to bail out another organization. That's just not the way I think this should work. If we come in as equals, okay, let's take a look at that. But if we're not coming in as equal partners, then I have a problem with that.
Frank, Duncan, to your point about response times, there's more than just dispatch to arrive on scene. Response time is from incident to call to dispatch. how long dispatch takes to make up its mind whether to run BL and AL or fire, and then response time. The King County, and I sat on this panel at King County for a number of years, was a EMS director. And the biggest change that we made in response times was we got a computer program, we'd figure out which words were the operative words for dispatcher to make the call and press the button. That's what really reduced our response times the most in King County. Now, King County is pretty tight. I mean, it's getting really tight down there if you're driving the traffic anymore. But the new program that the chiefs put in would hopefully reduce the number of ALS runs for, you know, someone needs to get out, fell out of bed and they need help getting them back in bed. You don't need an ALS unit to do that, at least initially. But it's that new program that hopefully would reduce the response times. The other one is public education. Most of your strokes don't show up in the emergency department within that 3-hour window because they don't realize they need to call within as soon as they see your stroke symptoms. Fire, I would imagine, is the same. The sooner you get the call after the fire is ignited, the better your response time is going to be to actually cure the disease, whether it's a fire or a stroke or a heart attack. So public education and working with your dispatch people. Here, we're locked, as Frank said, in just how many people we can employ and distribute throughout the island. I don't, you know, those numbers need to be looked at. But that's how King County does it, and that's how they got their response times down so low. The other thing would be have AEDs and work with our business community to train them to help be responders. That's how they really got their numbers in King County down, or their numbers up in survival rates, their numbers down in response time, by training the public. Now that would be something that we could all look at, and that's something we could, I think we could all agree upon. But that's just my experience in King County.
Yeah, my concern wasn't with response time, it was simply how to segregate out who was going to respond and whether or not there was a model that could work for both sides.
King County has the model, they've worked on it, they're renowned for it. It's an amazing program. There's a couple of computer geniuses down there that they can tell you, and they just track the words. And there's just certain words that dispatch learns, or certain voices in certain addresses.
I apologize, but isn't all this predicated, response times and all that, on personnel? We have a volunteer fire department with some paid staff.
Right.
EMS, I imagine, has the exact same setup. But if we're talking about increasing times to the north end and all that, when we don't have people living there, you can wish all you want, but unless you get a bigger pool to draw people from, it won't work.
That's why you have to have, the public needs to be educated in what they're paying for and what you can provide. If they want better service, it's going to cost a lot more money because you're going to have to put paid personnel on. If you read and pay attention to small fire districts and that sort of thing, as the population grows, they start putting on paid staff to cover the areas. It's just part of growing pains, it looks like, reading throughout. Duncan came from an area that saw huge growth as well, and then they became part of a rural fire district as well, too. So I think you saw the growth pretty much firsthand, didn't you, Duncan?
like a steamroller. Yeah.
And then, also, we do have, just as far as response times, we do have EMTs scattered all over the island that have BLS kits with oxygen and AEDs and whatever they need for first aid. So although our ambulance might take 15 minutes to get out to Roach Harbor, we generally have, you know, a response time of a few minutes before there's an EMT that can do life-saving measures on the scene. So it's not like a patient's waiting 15 minutes for help.
Okay,
even more so.
Do we have any more benefits we want to talk about?
Well, certainly we have a lot more written down, but we're going to share with the public and with the two agencies. But I think at this stage of the game, you know, like you said, we're at the 50 or 30,000 foot level. I think we covered enough of the basic parameters to be convincing or not be convincing.
Okay.
Can I add one more thing to this?
You bet.
On the consolidation benefits, a lot of these benefits can be accomplished without consolidation, with the two groups working together. Not all of them, but a lot of these we can do as working hand in hand, as two separate organizations. I mean, I think we should be training together all the time. It shouldn't be, you know, as an example. Looking over some of these things, improve service and unify service delivery. Those things can be done. Strategic planning, which is a big part of my background from before I came here, that can all be done. Becoming more efficient, you know, serving the public to the best of our abilities. Those are all things that we can do together without going through a merger. And I know I've been very negative on speaking about the merger so far. I'm sure you picked up on that. It's not that I am against it necessarily. I went through a merger in a major department that I came from. You can't compare it to this at all, but it was very difficult and we had some real tough problems. And I just want to make sure that we address all those before we go further.
Well put. I think that one of the reasons we're also looking at this, Frank, is that the Chief Martin is leaving. The public hospital district is going to have to make a decision. Do they want to replace the chief? Do they want to look at doing services better? You know, I mean, that's one of the main reasons that we're sitting at this table.
Well, I think you always want to do services better, no matter
right.
how good you're doing it. Your goal is always to be better, even if you're the best. You want to be better, so that's a good goal to go for. And with the chief retiring, this is a good time to be looking at this. But I see a lot of options here in the types of consolidations. I think a lot of these things we need to discuss, and I'm not sure what the board's going to do when he leaves, but you know, we can't rush into it because somebody's leaving.
I agree with you on a lot of that, and the thing is it is it's a good time to take a look at. We can cooperate. I think in my opinion that the hospital board could take a look at their organization, do some reorganization in their organization, and remain viable. And if our help to them remaining viable is a benefit to the public, I'm all for that. You know, more cooperations, more cross-training if that's needed, and servicing the citizens of San Juan County. The person that you took the place of, Frank, I would have never agreed with him.
Well, folks mentioned that we're going to lose Chief Martin here. He's sort of implied in the near future. You know, certainly I haven't heard that from Chief Martin. He is dedicated, if this merger is viable, to stick it out. And so his time frame is up in the air, particularly now that he has a 2-week vacation in Hawaii planned here. Near future, I think, you know, if it moves forward, he's going to facilitate it to the best of his ability. So that losing him, yeah, it's a given in a way, but the time frame is not a given. And I think we shouldn't, you know, like Frank said, rest a judgment on this, but I think we need to keep this movement going because it is a timely movement.
It seems to me we're trying to write the conclusions that should properly come from a citizen advisory group.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next item. Let's talk about identifying a path forward for the hospital board and the fire district. Is there a path forward? There was a matrix that we put together from a lot of the discussion we had, that the EMTs stay the same with some restructure. I don't have my matrix in front of me, the, thanks, Frank. Getting to be handy. That status quo, they remain the same. They make some organizational changes. They form their own EMS district. The EMS would be able to do that. Contract for services, where they would either contract services from the fire district, and they remain under the peace health district, or then we move down to the matrix part of it about moving forward with a total transfer into the services to San Juan Fire. And I guess I would ask if there is any discussion about what path forward anybody would like to take now. Do we want to continue going down a path of merger? Do we want to continue going down a path that the hospital board does some reorganizational changes? Do we want to leave it the same? Any discussion on that? Anna?
I think that's, in my opinion, this is just a little hasty. I would rather talk about potential challenges before we talk about a path forward.
Okay, I mean, if it's a path forward, it would be challenges. We could talk about challenges all night, though.
Sure, but we've been talking about potential benefits.
Okay.
It seems to me we should look at the pros and the cons.
All right.
As a board.
I think to agree with Commissioner, this is kind of early to be trying to pick a path.
Okay.
Because I know I haven't made up my mind what path to take, and I'm going to need more time, and I don't know if we should be making a decision before it's put to the voters, whether they want to do it or not. I guess we have to make a decision at some point, you know, whether to take this to the voters. But
all right.
We don't necessarily have to have a conclusion or a pick a path here.
The only reason I was following through this is on a special meeting, you've got to kind of follow your set agenda. If it's something we want to table, we can go ahead and just table it. But we got to put something down on the agenda to keep some talking points going, Frank. So it may be a little bit hasty. If we want to talk about challenges before we go forward, we can do that.
Well, I would like to suggest that we actually, I don't know if you make a motion or what, to move forward with the evaluation of a merger. I think that's what we're talking about. We're not saying what kind of merger or what we're going to do exactly or any of the details. I would just like to say we should move forward with evaluating the merger. And that would involve the whole Citizens Advisory Group and getting information from them and at least doing our due diligence to get that far.
May I suggest that let's finish up with, we've talked about the pros, let's talk a little bit about the cons. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing we do here would be to take a vote or make a motion to establish a citizens group to look forward into it. This way we've gone over all the, and that we can kind of wind it up with it. I think that's a great idea. I'd like to save that maybe towards the end.
Okay, so let's, that is on the end. We can move forward with the citizens group and the makeup of the citizens group. Let's go ahead and talk about some of those issues, Lisa. Anna?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have there are a lot of challenges, obviously, just with the boundaries of the districts don't align, but and the levy wouldn't transfer if EMS came to fire. But you know, the other thing that worries me is that we already own a building, the hospital district, that's sitting empty, and so what happens to the EMS building if there's a merger? Can EMS services fit in this building? How does that work for fire? What does that mean? There are a lot of questions. So, and I, you know, it's a financial concern in terms of if EMS does leave the hospital district, then we've got two buildings that we're responsible for.
Well, what, you know, that's been one of my problems I've had wrapping my arms around this thing is for this, you know, we talk about a more efficient operation. Mm-hmm. Having two headquarters
is not going to be an efficient operation. We, you know, I wish that building wasn't there. I wish you were back where you were, and it would have been much simpler for us moving forward, because we could, you know, we could move our maintenance out of this building, and we could expand a little bit that way, and then we'd have EMS and fire under one roof, so we could share paid on calls, paid staff, you know, that could go both directions, go fire, EMS. My biggest problem is that if we maintain both headquarters, we're not going to be able to see any benefit from sharing employees. Mm-hmm. And then I also have a problem with, if from reading, from what I'm reading in some of our reports that the chief has supplied, is that in 2022, you have a balloon payment coming due on that building for $1.4 million?
1.7.
How much?
1.74.
Oh.
No, that's higher than what the
I think it's 1.4.
Yeah, it's 1.3 something.
Oh, it's 1.7 now.
Yes.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another, you know, anyway, but.
Right, so if we don't have EMS services there, where's the revenue to help us make that payment? Yeah.
Exactly, and then, Albert mentioned, we could absorb the services in this building, but would the fire want to take on the added liability, not the added liability, but the added expense that would still have to be covered, or would that still be up to the hospital district to pay that? You still have to collect an EMS levy to pay that off. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm not sure how you're gonna do that. But that's just another problem that would have to be addressed. And there's no easy answer to that.
I want to clarify that. I don't think we can absorb it into this building as it currently stands. Is that correct?
She's correct.
Yeah.
We'd have to add on.
We'd have to add on, right. Move yeah. maintenance out into another building.
We'd have to come up with some investment to move the maintenance facility out of here, so that area could be dedicated to shoehorning EMS, and it would be tight.
Right.
But that would at least get you in one building. But that does incur
the cost
and the time frame yeah. of building a shop or reciting our maintenance services.
So I see that as an issue.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of things that this department is looking to do in the future. And if we start having to pay out for things that were unexpected, it only delays some of those things that we want to do. And I have a problem with that. But that property, who owns that property? I've heard, it seems like it's very convoluted the way that whole thing works. It was built by the hospital, is that correct?
Yeah, it was actually, there are two parcels there, Frank, and currently the PhD owns the property, okay. as it does the old Inner Island Medical Center. So it's separate, it's contiguous with, but it's separate from the property owned by Peace Island Medical Center and Peace Health.
So Peace Health does not own the building?
Correct. We own the property and the structure.
Okay.
It was built by Peace Health, and we leased it for a short period of time, and then we bought the whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel.
Okay, gotcha. Has it ever been marketed to see if there's a resale value?
I'm sure there's a resale value. As a matter of fact, Peace Health might well want it. They're already strapped for a room as it is, and it's contiguous with their facilities, you know, 100 feet away.
Yeah.
Have they been approached to date? No, but it was actually an idea that was discussed today as well as yesterday. So
it seems like something that, I mean, that would be a real plum from where I'm sitting to yeah. hear that, well, you know, this property could be sold or,
yeah. but.
Of course, that we couldn't look into that until we're down the road looking into
no,
the merger. So.
No, but it's a potential. So it's strategically yes. located for them. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, in the early stages of developing the buildings that we enjoy today, we talked about expansion in the future to the west, southwest part of that 23 acres. So here we have a structure that's up and running and even better situated logistically, particularly with regards to the ED. yeah, we're going to have to drag our heels as far as approaching them, but I think it's, it holds promise, it certainly does.
Yeah, and if the services did come to Fire District 3, you know, down the future, 10 years down the future, we may be looking at building a new facility. But, I mean, those would be things that we'd have to have figured out before we go to the voters. If this takes place, we're going to need more money, and this is where the money's going to go to, finding and relocating a new station house, possibly. And those costs would have to be figured in there at that time. But we'd need to have a plan to go forward before we go to the voters. The thing that you read about and try to understand on all these rural fire districts that have formed themselves and gone together, it is very important that you have a clear path forward when you go to the voters. So that when the voter sits there and says, okay, in 10 years, this is where the Fire District 3 was to look like. Very few does anybody do a five-year forecast of their capital expenditures and where you want to be in 5 years, where you want to be in 10 years. That's something that you need to take a look at. If you can go to before the voters and say, Fire District 3, this is where we want to be in 10 years. It's going to cost this amount of money to get there. Are you on board or you're not on board or you want us to do something different?
So I'd like to just backtrack a little bit, and one of the things that hasn't been brought up today, but is the potential of selling the old Inter Island Medical Center. Its appraised value is on the order of 950 to over a million, and that's an asset that historically has been earmarked to mitigate the bond that exists on the new Salmon Island EMS building. That's the good news. The bad news is it's been on the market
for 2 years.
No, 5 years.
Oh, okay. And, I gave you the benefit of three there.
But, yeah, you can't count. But you do have five fingers.
Yeah, so that's good.
But it's strategically located. Somewhere down the road it's going to sell. And that's a hunk of change, you know, close to $1 million. So, thank you.
Would you be willing to transfer that to the fire district? Part of a consolidation?
I would think so, because it's earmarked to support Salmon Island EMS. And if Salmon Island EMS is under the wing of Fire District 3, then it would be a natural in my book. Mm-hmm. That's the good news. The bad news is I'm not going to be a commissioner probably in that time frame, so my vote doesn't count today. Great question.
I guess my question would be then is we'd have to find that answer out. Can Junior Taxing districts do that? Transfer property amongst one another?
I know they can't assume somebody else's debt, but I'm not sure about assets.
I guess that'd be a question we'd have to find out.
Well, we could mitigate the debt that's outstanding that in the name of Salmon Island EMS and the district by the sale of that building. And just reduce the debt and the debt service, ongoing debt service. We certainly can do that.
It can always be done. It's how much you pay the attorneys.
Well,
so other negatives. So, Brad, I want to congratulate you on the great report.
Thank you.
That you did. And I went through it and jotted down some of the negatives that you put in the report. And I would suggest to the public, if you really want to get an understanding of this, read Brad's report. Nicely done. The first one I noticed was the geopolitical taxation issue, the islands, Friday Harbor, taxpayer parity, and all those. We've discussed that. The second one I noted was the different budgetary constraints. We have two different budgets. I mean, not only are they different, but they're reported different. The philosophy behind them is different. And trying to look at what's going on is different. It's difficult. That would have to be dealt with. There's current and future litigation. We have the CID thing that's ongoing, et cetera, et cetera. That's another obstacle that could change which path we do if all of a sudden it comes down and Quahog Hospital District has a big debt to the Attorney General. Four is the morale issue. Chief Cressy put it would take 4 to 5 years for employees to sort of level out. There's a drop in morale. I've been through an EMS to fire before, and there was a distinct, it took 6 years someone, and I was the medic director, we went from pure EMS, hospital-based, to Redmond Fire. We lost a couple paramedics, just because, we won't go over that. The EMS building we've talked about, and that's a long-term project. You've already said you're not running for election because you won't be here to vote on it, apparently.
Well, I didn't promise.
Go ahead, get something out of the air. The other issues that I've heard from the public was, here are openness and public input. That's a long-term project. That's not a short-term, I'm going to retire tomorrow, let's do this issue. The other one is contractual issues. I've been through a lot of contracts, and that's where the devil is if we're going to do contracting, and that is going to take quite a bit of time. So the way I see it is we have three things going on. One, we have a desire to do this, and we think it's a good deal, or it could be a good deal. Two, we have the issues of annexation and all of that, and convincing people that it's good with long-term planning. Three, we have citizens that could give a lot of input into this. And things I've heard from citizens are, well, you know, why weren't the police invited? And there's an overhead there, and they got a taxing, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. And those things need to be hashed out so if we do go to a vote, and it sounds like we're going to have to go to a vote here because the two county assessors said you can't just move over there in their article in the journal. So that's an issue. The other issue is, you know, we all have a fiduciary relationship as commissioners to our taxpayers. You've brought that up several times here now, Frank. I feel that way to my people that, well, I didn't get elected, I got appointed, so to some of these people. And that's a long-term issue, and to do the best for them, and that's their role. But what we're doing the best for our taxpayers might not be the best for the future. But that's a long-term goal. So we have short-term goals and long-term goals, and it's going to be hard to do those unless we have a very, very limited defined contract. Very limited. Other issues are, you know, in a contract, there's always the claims and the occurrence. You know, as the contract moves, and the contracts just don't happen in a day, as they move, the liabilities come up, and who's going to take the liability? Geez, we made a mistake, we didn't plan it this way, da-da-da-da-da. Who's going to be responsible for that on the sides? So there's a lot of issues in the contracting stuff that we're not going to be able to solve in 1 month or 2 months. A lot of them we don't even know yet until we get into this. So those are the issues that I see. But the big issue, the big issues are the annexation, public involvement, doubling the details in contracting. I don't think we can come to a great conclusion here today that's going to solve the long-term issues. I think we've all said that. So I'm looking for something to move forward, but that moving forward has got to really involve the public. It's got to involve the city of Friday Harbor and public education as to what's going on. And I'm glad to see this audience as big as it is here now because you can all talk to 10 people. But we have big problems to solve. We got one building to sell, and now we're talking about selling a second one, and we haven't sold the first one yet. And so we've got money issues there. And we have the chief who's going on vacation and is probably not going to come back from Hawaii after this meeting. Let's take it just a smile.
Well, and, you know, and also, you know, in all of this conversation, I've heard why maybe these things will be good for each agency, but I haven't really heard why this is in the best interest of the community. And I think that's the larger issue in terms of selling this to our community.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't seen anything that's going to make it better. You know, all they care about is, yeah, am I going to get somebody here to help me? And I haven't seen we've changed that.
So, Frank, to that point, it brings up the other point of limited scope of this meeting. Getting someone here to help me might be paramedicine who doesn't respond to a fire and doesn't respond to a 911 call. Mm-hmm. It might be community education and getting the business district to have their AEDs when they do weddings at Friday Harbor and train those people because no matter what kind of response time, and I practiced medicine, emergency medicine for 47 years, the earlier you get those paddles on and let that little computer do its work, the better off you are. So there's a lot of other issues that need to be investigated so we can give the best bang for the taxpayer's dollar back to the taxpayer. Cutting the overhead of four human resource people, or cutting the overhead of nine secretaries, or cutting the overhead of whatever the overhead's going to be. But also being creative, and that's what I would hope the Citizens Advisory Board would do for us, is come up with some creative ideas.
I think a lot of what you're talking about is public information. And
exactly.
That's, you know, the fire department, I think, believe Brad, once a year, we put out a flyer.
Three or four times a year.
Okay, excuse me. I don't always check my mailbox.
It's varied over the years.
Yeah.
Our intention is to have a
And those are fast. Those are great things. AEDs, having them available, you know, all we have to do is take the example of, you know, Seattle, what they're doing there, what all the things that they've accomplished. Mm-hmm. We can even, you know, you can train people to use AEDs. I mean, when we teach first aid and CPR, that's something that can be part of that. That in fact, it is part of what BLS training. So those are all great things, and that can go hand in hand in what we're talking about here, and it probably should. I just don't want to muddy the waters of what we're trying to get done. You know what we're actually asking of them. I think what you're suggesting is a great idea. That should be year long. Or year-round going on, and we should, you know, figure out a way to make sure if all these businesses and areas like, you know, Roach Harbor, you know, I don't know if they have them or not. I've never seen one, but do they have them?
Yeah. But are all the people trained how to use them?
That's something that we're already doing joint training when we do CPR here and stuff. You know, your folks come over and help us, and we can continue those things. Yeah. So
Frank,
those are all good things.
Statistically, the most AEDs of any community anywhere, including in Seattle.
Fantastic.
And Laney every year is awarded a plaque for the amount of lay provider CPR classes. I think it's about 1,200 people a year that go for our CPR classes. So there is a very active public campaign. And Roach Harbor has two AEDs. I was on a call. I was late coming to this meeting because I was there, and they were standing there with their AED, ready to use it. They've had a save because one of their employees had used it. So they're pretty on it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Their witness cardiac save rates are commensurate with Medic One in King County, which is one of the best in the nation. So, you know, and our hat's off to Salmon Island EMS as it is today. If we could enhance that, I mean, that's
sure
all the better.
Yeah. I'm all for it.
So I didn't hear any discussion on the morale issue.
That's, you know, so the merger that I went through mm-hmm. back in late 90s, morale issue was a huge thing. But we're talking about two paid departments that are working side by side. Originally, they were working 24-hour shifts together. The final outcome was making them two. They were one, but they were two separate entities. So the medics had their own fire station that they rolled out of. And we were always great when we were working together. It was the downtime where the morale problems came up. And I won't get into, because I still know all those people,
yeah.
But I can't get into that stuff. Actually, I probably can't do it legally anyway. But it was a real problem. And I don't know. In fact, I jotted down a note that maybe, you know, the Firefighters Association should talk about this and see what their feelings are on it. I'm not looking for, do you want to do it or not? I'd like to know, do you think there are problems that could come from a merger? I don't see morale issue as being one yet, but I haven't really talked to anybody, you know, about that, you know, so.
Brad, you had it in your report. Do you want to speak to that issue, the morale issue?
I
am going out on a limb because I can't base this on anything specifically. I think the rank and file, certainly our paid on call or the volunteers from EMS are potentially more flexible. But if we're conjoining, the career staff is probably where it's going to be the most difficult. But I think most of the people who volunteer for either agency are here for the community. And regardless of what the is on their sleeve or on the side of the vehicle that they're driving, they're going to do what needs to be done. I mean, that's why I talked about the percentage of our people who are cross-trained as EMTs and respond mm-hmm. that way. You know, they're not as concerned about the politics or the mm-hmm. agency details as much as helping the public.
Okay, but we had a
couple of years transition when we started providing contract service for Friday Harbor. And I don't think it was terribly bad. There were some people that didn't fit in the new model, or the new model didn't fit them, whatever mm-hmm. that might have been. And that's certainly going to happen with any significant change in day-to-day operation for any agency.
In the fire service, there's a lot of pride per station house. You know, they take pride in their groups. It was molding the Friday Harbor Firefighters Volunteer Fire Department. They were very proud of the service that they had built and wanted to come over. And when they came over to here, it was joining those two together. We weren't sure how it was gonna work. I think everybody came over except for one, wasn't it, Brad? I think one didn't come over. And it did work out, but it's the pride that they have in the station house. And it's actually good to have that, because it increases a little bit of competition to so you can get to the scene quickest too, and who can perform better. So there is that competition between station houses and service groups. And you know, I could see where some morale issues would come up, but we worked through the morale issues when San Juan Fire came over. And you know, it's, or as our past chief used to say, sometimes it really doesn't matter what's painted on the side of the truck until it comes to their pride.
Yeah.
So